Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, it's Friday, February the 8th, 2013. And this is The Last Word. I'm Michael Lawson. I have a question for you. Do you know who your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. And on this show, we're going to be discussing those who are working for you and those who are working against you. Just because they are a Democrat or just because they're a Republican and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we're going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're also going to be discussing a lot of other things. The education system, the military, science, sports, healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are you 26 years old and still on your family's healthcare plan? I hope. Or, as the Regressive Party says, Obamacare. We will bring what you need to know because that is the last word in everything from the cities, counties, the state, the entire nation, and the world. So sit down and get a pencil, a piece of paper, and take this hour as a classroom experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson. Okay, we are here. We're doing, there's not going to be any calls today because we are doing a pre-tape show because I will be away in Charleston, South Carolina. Matter of fact, I'm leaving town in Charlotte tomorrow. And to the death of my wife's family, so we have to go down there for a funeral. And her mother is still there, her family, she's from Charleston. So we will be gallivanting, having some shrimp and some other things that I think are good to eat down there in the that city. Matter of fact, it's a small, small city. a lot of people might not know, is called Adams Run. It's right off of, well, it's near Old Military Highway, Highway 17. But we are going to have a great time after the funeral, as I always do when I go down there. I love our family, and I love the food even better. So, but in the meantime, we got a good show today. We are going to have the Reverend Kojo Mantumbu. I hope I got that right, Kojo. Who's the president of the NAACP. We've been doing a three-parter because the HK on J, which starts this Saturday, February the 9th, in Raleigh, they're expecting a mass of people, in excess of 20,000 people. This is their seventh anniversary. They're going up there to have a rally right outside, excuse me, the assembly to let these regressive party members up there who have taken over our government in this state, to let them know that we're watching them and we're not going to let them get away with what they think they're going to get away with. Joining Reverend Kojo is going to be Luis Rodriguez, community organizer for Action North Carolina, and they have been part of this whole HK on J, which is, they named it J, stands for Jones Street, which is where they march up. They're going to start from Shaw University, and they're going to march all the way to the State Assembly, which is about a mile and a half or so, 2 miles. We're also going to have Grace Leem, who is the Cabarrus County Chair for the Democratic Party for in the 8th District, and her and that fiasco that's been going on up there in the Democratic Party. We finally got the tormentor for the Democratic Party out of office. He's no longer the chair of the party. And they tried to bring Grace up on charges because she wanted to back our president and our vice president and didn't want to back Larry Kissel from the 8th District, who completely disowned our president. We'll talk about that later. But so there's quite a few things we're going to be talking about. And I hope that everybody is sitting back and adjusted with my notes here and just ready to listen. And as a matter of fact, I think it's going to be a smoking show. And let's see, right now, who we have here? We have a gentleman from the Washington-based Advancement Project, Reverend Edward Hales. We've had on our show before, and I am delighted to have him back. Good morning, Reverend. How are you?
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
And I hope it's – how's the weather in Washington?
Well, it's chilly, but a little bit of sun, and, you know, we've had chillier days. So
I'm sure you have.
Okay.
And snowier days, too, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And let me kill this phone here. I don't know why I got this phone going. Anyway, so, Reverend, I, you know, since we last talked, matter of fact, it was last year when all that fiasco was going on down there in Florida.
Right.
And what is the Advancement Project? What have they done since? I know you've been involved up to your eyeballs with the shenanigans of Florida, Rick Scott and whatnot. What has happened in the meantime since then, since we last spoke?
Well, I'll tell you, we were impressed and gratified that voters overcame so many different schemes that were put in place to make it more difficult for them to participate in last year's presidential election. That
mm-hmm.
voters turned out despite the cutbacks in early voting opportunities, the third-party voter registration requirements, the uncertainty and the the problems with these restrictive photo ID requirements. There were just so many schemes put in place to make it harder for people who wanted to vote and were eligible to vote to participate in our democracy. So we fought back in courts and with messages that made it clear that that people who were entitled to vote had an opportunity and indeed an obligation to lift up their voices in the election and not to be turned back because people did not want them to vote. And so we were able to make a lot of inroads and get voters prepared to fight back against intimidation and questions that were raised about their eligibility, and they turned out and reelected the president of the United States. And right after the election, we began to see already new moves afoot by the party in opposition to the president, seeking to find ways to make it easier for their Republican nominees to win future elections. They decided in state legislatures where the majority members of the legislatures were in the Republican Party to see if they could come up with new rules on the Electoral College, the way the votes are awarded to the electors who vote for who will make it, who will become the president. And
well,
so,
you know, I don't want to cut you off, but you know, didn't they learn their lesson during this last election that they tried to kill the vote? And didn't that make the dude? I think the way it was 5 million votes. I think that if they did not put these morons that they had up for election, and they didn't try to suppress the vote like they did, they could have won this election. But I think they angered the people so much that people came out who never would have come out, and people stood in line in Florida, for 8 hours, 10 hours.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you are so right that people they just saw right through these efforts to game the system and give partisan advantage to the party. So they said, no, we're not going to take it. We're going to show up. And this is we support the president, but we also are looking out for our own interests. And if they're not doing it just to this president, they are doing it to us. They're trying to take away our votes, and we're not going to take it.
And the thing that you know their major scheme was, okay, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and we're not going to take Obamacare. We don't want no part of it. And now they're all coming around. Rick Scott, yesterday, Ohio governor, he's coming around. Jan Brewer. What's the story here? So now they all want, they see money. That's the problem. They see money.
There you go. That's right.
And as far as where is the, at this point in time, the Advancement Project, for the people who don't know what the Advancement Project does, can you give us a short rundown of how you are involved and have been helping this country and along with a lot of other organizations? But you guys have been really out front very much. So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, thank you, Brother Lawson. We have been in existence since 1998. We are a national civil rights and racial justice action tank. We work on the ground in support of local organizing efforts informed by careful legal reasoning and strategic communications. We have national and local partners around the country that identify problems that are happening at the state and local level And we provide technical resources with our experienced lawyers and strategic communications experts, mapping experts to both put a spotlight on problems, but also provide recommended solutions based on work we've done around the country.
Mm-hmm. And the main thing that's that you guys are involved with right now is this the electoral process as far as electing the president in each state.
Yeah,
tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have looked at needed reforms to the Electoral College for some time. And, I mean, no one thinks that the current system is perfect. Certainly, in the after the 2000 presidential election, the Bush v. Gore decision, the Supreme Court basically declared that the individual citizen has no federal constitutional right to vote for electors for the president of the United States unless and until the state legislature chooses a statewide election as a means to implement its powers to appoint members of the Electoral College. So then that flagged for us that we do not have an affirmative, explicit constitutional right to vote. And so for some time now, we have been pushing for a national consensus in support of amending the United States Constitution so we have in very explicit affirmative language as exists in other nations, other democracies, including South Africa, explicit language that says all Americans over the age of 18 have a constitutional right to vote. We have over 13,000, I should say, jurisdictions that implement voting systems and interpret rules differently. So that means whenever we go someplace, we have to study their particular voting system to make sure that the citizens have the right to vote. Now, what is I say that because we know that there are some issues with our electoral college right now. There are more white citizens that live in the so-called battleground states than voters of color. But voters of color have increased their share of the electoral vote in recent elections, especially this last election. And so now you have people saying, well, one reason why the president was elected was because he was able to get states that have larger numbers of voters of color supporting him. But if we broke it down by congressional district as opposed to the national vote of the entire state, then by congressional district we have more Republican led congressional districts within states. So why don't we come up with a system that awards votes to the Electoral College based on these congressional districts and not statewide? And they know by doing that, they would get a larger share of the Electoral College votes. And then since it's Electoral College, by way of the Constitution, that determines who is elected president, then they think that they can win. In fact, even though the president clearly won the national popular vote in this last election, if you broke it down by congressional district, Mitt Romney would be president today.
Well, that's only because they gerrymandered all the districts.
That's exactly right. They stack, they pack, and they crack the districts of voters of color. And
right,
they, so they
correct.
Have more congressional representation, even though more Democratic votes have gone for members of Congress, there's a majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives.
Yeah,
it's because of the way they do the redistricting.
A million and a half more people voted for Democrat representatives than Republican representatives. So, but now, a lot of people don't understand this proportionment and this. How can we make a connection between House proportion now to back to the 3/5 compromise? I mean, that's where it came from, correct?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's how you attempt to win elections, by gaining a partisan advantage by breaking it down in a proportionate way. And it does go all the way back to the 3/5 of a person compromised in the Constitution from the very beginning. And so when we see these proposals, it's already toxic. It's already radioactive for us. As soon as we see these proposals, we think back on that original constitutional compromise, and we say, look, we cannot let this go unexamined, unreported. We've got to get the word out that there's something wrong with this, that people are trying to game the system for a partisan advantage. And so that's what we've been able to do. And so far, once the alarm went up that there's something wrong with this, many of the Republican legislatures have started to back away from them. But in Pennsylvania, they're still considering it. And one reason we think they started backing away from it, because in 2014, you'll have some more statewide elections and even some gubernatorial elections this year. And they don't want to be seen as trying to game the system, because they know what happened in 2012 when voters saw that that these schemes were in place and they fought back. So they said, uh-oh.
Yeah, but you know, I think you're correct. When you're dealing with people that are really for the people, this regressive party, as I call them, this, and they're a small, minute portion of the Republican Party. They have scared real Republicans so bad that they could be challenged in a primary. That and that's the reason why they're in bed with the tiger right now. And now the tiger's running out of food and is looking at them licking their chops. So the thing is that they all these, I think it was about 6 or 7 states, I think it was Florida, Michigan, and a bunch of
Ohio
and Pennsylvania. They've all come around now and said, oh, you know what? We don't want to do this. But you see, the thing is that they know, just like the governor of Pennsylvania, he will not get elected again because he has torn his pants already.
Yeah.
And Bob McDonnell in Florida, he's not going to get elected again because he tore his pants. The problem is, though, with the redistricting, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was the first vice chair for the 8th Congressional District until the people did not vote in 2010. And in 2011 and 12, when they redistricted everything, I was moved out of the 8th District, so I am no longer the first vice chair of the 8th District.
Right.
Now, the 8th District was Mecklenburg County, which is probably, it's one of the largest, it is the largest district next to Wake County in the state. And Mecklenburg County was the one that got Larry Kissel elected. He would not have gotten elected without our district.
Right.
So when they redistricted everything, they took, we had about 31 precincts. There are now 2 precincts in the 8th district. And the other precincts all were thrown into the 12th precinct, which is 12th district, which is Mel Watts district, which is majority African American.
African American already.
So, absolutely. So this is an example of packing.
That's
and
right.
There are suits in right now. That I know the NAACP has a suit in against this. And the last time they tried this, it was overturned and everything was put back. So there is a good possibility that can happen again.
True. And that also leads to this whole point of voting rights and the in Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act being under review by the Supreme Court. Right. Arguments will be at the end of this month on the Shelby County decision, and we're looking very closely and filed with other groups an amicus brief saying that we need to protect Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which requires preclearance of some of these redistricting moves if it's going to have a negative impact on voters of color.
Well, has an amicus brief been put together in Texas anywhere? I'm sure it has.
Yes, yes.
Okay, because they know they can't stop that train. That train is coming down the tracks, and it is going to be minority in at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they will. They know they will not get elected again.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't make changes now, where they can stop this train or get on the train,
right?
The game is lost. Texas will be blue by 2020.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
So now, what does? How does the Advancement Project pick their fights?
Well, we like to because we have developed strong working relationships with groups on the ground who take the lead on actions that will make it better for their people to participate. We wait for requests to provide the resources we have. But we always look to see if there is a historically disenfranchised community, that there's a concentration of voters of color that are being locked out by some move. And then we look to see if there are activities that are ongoing that need some need to be challenged or need to be addressed right away.
Mm-hmm. So you're located all across the country then, right?
Well,
I know you're California and other places.
That's right. That's right. And our national office, and that's where I work, is in Washington, D.C.
Right.
But we do have attorneys and other experts working on the ground in different states.
Now,
and we have a California office as well.
Did you have – I know you had people out in this last election monitoring the vote.
That's right. In Florida and Wisconsin and North Carolina, Texas, Nevada, Ohio. So we were in several states across the country on election day and before election day, just trying to make sure that voters were protected.
Right. Did you find any Democrats voting 2 and 3 times?
Didn't find that.
You didn't find that. So the whole idea that people who aren't Democrats or who are Democrats voting half a dozen times, or people who aren't even registered voting 2 and 3 times, that you did not find. That does not occur then.
We did not see or receive any reports like that. No.
So there hasn't been any reports by the Republican Party that took place?
None that we have seen, no.
So that means that everybody voted for the socialist who was president. that's what I'm hearing. That means
no.
So everybody wanted the socialist by like over 5.5 million votes. So
right.
Is there something wrong with this picture? I mean, I just can't comprehend this.
Yeah.
It just gets out of hand. So now,
tell you on that very, very point, it almost became amusing to see the lengths that people would go to that seemed so obvious to an outsider but seemed so real to them. There was a Republican legislator in New Hampshire that said that he saw all of these black people standing in line to vote. He said he had never seen all these black people. But it was just a reminder of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man concept. Like, a lot there are certain white people that will see black people every day but not really see them. But all of a sudden it became important to him that people were actually voting against his interest. And then they became visible all of a sudden. It was just amazing, like magic. They just showed up.
You know, it is so unbelievable.
Yes.
And nobody knew them, he said.
All right.
Nobody knew them. Where did they come from? I mean, it's like they just came out of the earth.
Out of the vapors, yeah, vapors.
Now, the thing is that the thing that I don't understand is how do you have enough nerve? Do they ever listen to what they say?
I know.
Ever listen to what they say? It sounds so incredible. Speaking about that, the incredible Wayne LaPierre was on with on Fox, and Chris Wallace, who I guess he wasn't expecting, asked him the question about the president's children and why they ran the ad. Talking, he said, "Well, we didn't. We really weren't targeting them." He said, "But you mentioned them." He says, "Yes, well, you know, but a lot of people have bodyguards." He said, "Yeah, just like you." He said, "Well, I have." He said, "But you got them in the studio here." and he stuttered. He didn't know what to say. It's the
same
thing. How do you say things when they're so obvious?
So obvious,
outrageous. I mean, it makes no comment whatsoever. You can also say that about Alan West. I mean,
that's
you got 71 communists in the Democratic Party in the House. I mean, so they only listen to one channel, and that one channel gives them a direction to go with blinders on. So this is what those people expect to hear, and they don't care what anybody else hears outside of it. Outside Fox News, outside Fox World, these Republican candidates feel that they can say anything at any time and without any reaction, because their segment of their audience is only geared to listening to one theme and one sound.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you for, I know you are very busy, and I want to thank you for coming on our show again. And I would like to ask you to come back after the decision has been made.
Okay.
What is the decision will be made in the, is the Supreme Court hearing the decision?
The arguments are in at the end of this month, and I think the 26th, and so probably in May, we should expect a decision.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
And if anything else is breaking before then, I definitely will call you, ask you to come back and explain to everybody what is going on.
Okay, well, thank you for this opportunity, and I wish you the best.
I thank you very much, as usual.
All right.
Thank you.
Take good care. Bye now.
And that was Reverend Eddie Hales from the Advancement Project, who gave us a rundown on what the heck is going on. Had a little interference on the line there. I hope that it didn't come through. I could hear it through my headsets. But we will, as always, rely on Mr. Hales to give us the straight scoop. Well, I want to tell you, there are a couple things going on that are really unbelievable. You know, have you heard about these secret memos that about the targeted killings that we are doing? I'm on both sides of the fence here. I am both side. I'm on both sides of the fence. Excuse me. We are, since President Obama has been in office, he has almost doubled or tripled the use of drones to win the war on terrorism. There are a lot of people that are very, very upset with him, friends of mine, because he's using it, using these drones. Now, this is not, even though they say it, this is not a world war. We are not fighting a world war, even though terrorists are all over the world. This is not a world war. World war, the termination which is commonly used, is where everybody was on somebody's side and they were fighting one another. This is not the case here. This is a guerrilla war, a guerrilla world war. Guerrillas do not fight fair. Now, that's why they call them a guerrillas. Guerrillas do not fight fair. Yes, we have the probably the biggest, the strongest military in the world. But unless you have been in the Army or the Marines or the Navy or the Air Force, or the Coast Guard, or the Reserve, or the Guard, and been shot at under fire, I just don't believe that you can really be that hostile to what the president is doing. If I was over there fighting in one of those military outfits, I would expect the President of the United States to win at all costs, to protect my butt, whether I was on the ground or flying a plane or on a ship. You can't win with your hands tied. The object of war is to win. The object of fighting is to win. We do not go into a fight to tie. We do not go into a fight to lose. We do not go into a fight to lose an arm, a leg, an eye, a hand, a foot. We go in to win at all costs, or you don't fight. You don't fight. And if you don't fight, the bully will always win. The Christmas story. Everybody knows the Christmas story. Every time he used to go to school, the bully used to jump on him and beat him up. Until one day, the bully picked the wrong day. He was just upset, and I'm trying to remember why he was upset. It was maybe he broke his glasses. I think that's what it was. I can't remember. But anyway, the bully jumped on him, and he beat the bully to smithereens. And the rest of the time that the bully saw him, he ran. Now, if we were just fighting fisticuffs, it's a different story. But they're not playing to lose. They're not playing to die, even though they say they are. They're playing to win because they think they will outlast us. And that's a different ideology. So if we use drones to get the terrorists, then we use drones to get the terrorists. And of course, along with the use of drones, you have collateral damage. Well, it was 3,000 collateral damages, 3,000 worth of collateral damage in the World Trade Centers when they crashed to the ground. So I would like if there was some way that we could change that scenario. We're no longer destroying cities like they did in Dresden or Tokyo or Nagasaki or Hiroshima. Yes, they're killing 100 people just to get at maybe 5 people or one person. So, but as John Kerry said, how do you, when he made his speech to Congress on Vietnam, he says, how do you, stopping the war, bringing the soldiers home, how do you tell the person that he has to be the last person to come home? How do you tell our soldiers that are over there, that are fighting these terrorists, that we're not going to give them the help that they need to prevent terrorists from attacking them? And this thing about the American, oh, we killed an American, we sanctioned a kill on an American. I get it. I understand. But when someone goes to the other side, they're on the other side. They're not with us anymore. And so why should we determine, why should we even offer them a chance to surrender when they went on the other side? And they're not going to surrender. I mean, you know, this is that was one of the there's a memo. Let me read this. This is just came out, as a matter of fact, a few minutes ago. The secret memos exposed Obama's double standard on target killings. Okay. People want to know where the outrage is between the Bush era torture policies and President Obama's justification for killing American citizens with no due process, no transparency, and no accountability. Michael Isikoff was talking about the Obama's Orwellian justification for assassinating American citizens, believed to be the senior, you know, just sort of a senior operational leaders for Al-Qaeda. Killing suspected terrorists who happen to be Americans is not an assassination, according to the president's Justice Department. We have been going out and killing American citizens for a long time. When the FBI says they put out a list, wanted dead or alive, what the heck do you think that means? It means wanted dead or alive. Whichever way you can, dead or alive. Now, if we're going to go after a targeted American citizen who is now working with Al-Qaeda, are we supposed to send in 1,000 troops, SEAL Team 6, into another country just to get this person when he has a whole army with him? That didn't happen with, that's not what happened with Bin Laden. Bin Laden didn't have, he was hiding out because he was a wanted terrorist. But he was hiding out in a place where people didn't say anything. He didn't have an army around him. That's why we could send in SEAL Team 6. And it wasn't in the middle of the country. So there was something we could do about that. But as Issachar says, killing suspected terrorists who happen to be Americans is not an assassination. Okay? In the department's view, a lethal operation conducted against U.S. citizens whose conduct poses an imminent threat of violent attack against the United States would be a legitimate act of national self-defense that would not violate assassination ban. Here's the problem. Jesse James is wanted dead or alive. So you're telling me that we cannot kill this guy? I mean, the man that killed him, he got a bonus. It was wanted dead or alive, and it was $10,000 or something for killing Jesse James. So they were paying the people to do it. So this is a double standard what they're talking about here. Is that although Attorney General Eric Holder told the public in March that killing Americans could be justified if government officials determined the target posed an imminent threat of violent attack, his memo creates a massive loophole. It contains a chilling little phrase, broader concepts of imminence, to absolve the government of responsibility to find a clear and present danger. The condition that an operational leader presents an imminent threat of violent attack against the United States does not require the United States to have clear evidence that a specific attack on a U.S. person and interest will take place in the immediate future. Of course not. Jesse James was wanted dead or alive. Not because we knew he was coming to rob another train or another bank. He was wanted dead or alive. Kill the man on sight or bring him in if you can. So I don't think anything here about targeted killings is not correct. Issachar further goes on, this is not an abstract theory. We're already killing our own in the name of war. Under Obama, the anti-war candidate who campaigned against Bush's trimming of U.S. civil liberties, the United States has escalated a number of drone strikes against al-Qaeda suspects, including deadly strikes on American citizens, such as the 2011 strike in Yemen that killed alleged al-Qaeda operative Anwar al-Awlaki and Samir Khan. They were U.S. citizens who had not been indicated or indicted or charged with crimes. You might wonder whether Democrats who accused Bush of attacking the Constitution will hold Obama to a similar standard. It will also be interesting to watch the Republicans who oppose virtually everything Obama's policy says will fight this one. It will be very funny. Let's see how they fight this one. Because I'm telling you something right now. They can't have their cake and eat it too. Now, here's some questions that are posed. Where does this slippery slope end? If killing Americans with no due process is okay, when their alleged crime is consorting with al-Qaeda, it's not a huge intellectual leap to give government officials the same judge and jury authority over other horrendous acts such as mass murder, drug trafficking, and child pornography. Well, the problem is they already have it. A mass murderer can be killed on site. Because I'm telling you, if he's on the FBI most wanted list, read the small print. It says wanted, dead or alive. And it said that since we were a nation growing up. Tombstone had these pictures with these people's faces on it all the time. Wanted, $5,000, $10,000, dead or alive. So this, to me, this is laughable. I can't see where anything the president is doing is out of the ordinary. And you're telling me all these drug dealers, the cartels from Mexico, they're all wanted dead or alive. Every one of them. Every last one of them. The next thing he says, shouldn't there be a higher standard? Yes, in a perfect world, there always wants to be a higher standard, and we always need to strive for a higher standard. But in certain places, in certain times, we cannot. In the torture debate, many Americans seem to buy the concept that extreme measures might be necessary to prevent an imminent attack against the U.S. Should the standard be higher for torture than murder? Well, the problem is, torture has been a hidden word. If, to me, personally, torture is not the same as murder. Now, if you wind up dead from the torture, same thing. So I think that's a red herring that they threw in there. The Isikoff is throwing in it. Number three, what makes the target killing lawful? Holder told the public months ago that killing Americans can be justified if capture is not feasible. But the memo gives more leeway to government officials condoning the killing of an American if the U.S. troops would be put at risk in an attempted capture, for example. This is not double speak. Why should we have more Americans killed to get one person? And then you can't tell me, oh, just let him go up and forget about him. He's killing American soldiers. Or his group, through his leadership, is killing Americans. This makes no sense to me. This is not doublespeak. Extreme measures in war are necessary sometimes. In war. Now, as I go back to my original statement, are we at war? Are we at war? See, this is what I want to know. Are we at war? If we're not at war, then what are we? It's a guerrilla war, as I said. To me, one American soldier's life is more than I would want to give up, not to get a terrorist. And if it takes sending a drone in there, then so be it. We know the guerrillas, a lot of them, are cowards. Some of them are not cowards. They really believe it's justifiable. But when you start hiding behind your family and women, then it becomes a little dicey to say whether or not you're a coward or not. The whole of the wall gang didn't hide out with women in the town and run. They hid out in the whole war. They had their own hideout. They were murderers and robbers. They were wanted dead or alive. Hitchcock also writes, why the secrecy? Obama promised to run the most transparent administration of modern times. And in many ways, he's kept that pledge. But not on this life and death issue. A group of 11 senators led by Democrat Ron Wyden of Oregon has urged the president to release all Justice Department memos on targeted killings. There are many more and more important documents than the Isikoff memo that need to be exposed. The public deserves to know why its president, without due process or visibility, is issuing death sentences to alleged terrorists, some of them Americans. They learned today that the public statements of administrative officials on this matter can't be trusted. Well, I like Michael Isikoff. I like, this is the first thing that he wrote that I disagree with him with. I don't remember anything else I've ever read that Isikoff has written that I disagree with. This, I completely disagree. He does not give a good answer in these four talking points of why we shouldn't have targeted killings. Every single thing here we have done since the Wild West was here. John Dillinger was wanted dead or alive. You could have shot John Dillinger in the street without due process, and they did shoot him in the street without due process in an alleyway. You remember? How come he was an American citizen. And by the way, most of these people here who Isikoff is talking about gave up, renounced their citizenship. Okay? But they shot John Dillinger. Okay? Whole bunch of people, the FBI's most wanted list, have been shot. So what are we talking about here? This is not done? It's always been done. And saying that he's an American citizen is no justification. That's a cop-out because you have nothing else to say. This is to make you feel that we're not holier than thou. We're not holier than thou. We are not holier than thou. And there is to prove to you, I want to just run you this little segment here about why. It's a short segment from the Great Story Newsroom.
I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it, diversity and opportunity and freedom.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing.
You don't look satisfied. One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is... There is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only three categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite?
Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
Well... Is that enough? Or is it not enough? When we take it as a whole, we can't beat up this president because he does 1,000 out of 1,005 things that we want him to do. You can't act that way. That's completely ludicrous. This man has had more burdens put on his shoulders than any president in the history of this country outside of Washington and Lincoln. And if you have ever fought in any war, and you're going to tell me that you do not want your president protecting you with every single thing that he has in his arsenal, well, you're a fool. So I take exception to what Michael Isikoff has said in this so-called secret memos. We've been targeting people for assassination and killing since the dawn of man. President Obama didn't come out with the FBI's most wanted list. That was out long before he was even a gleam in his parents' eye. Bad people, FBI most wanted list, wanted dead or alive, American citizens. So don't tell me because these American citizens are overseas now